Go ahead.
Please be advised that the special meeting of the Legislative Committee, a committee of the whole, of the Annuity and Pension Board scheduled for Tuesday, January 28th, 2025, is called to order. The time is 9 o'clock. Please call the roll.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Mr. Christensen? Not present as yet. Mr. DeClean?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovac is excused. Ms. Ford?
Here.
Quorum.
First item on the agenda for consideration is an amendment to Board Rule 2C in the form of a new Section 8 regarding succession planning for ERS key management positions. I believe currently no procedure exists in the board rules governing what happens in the event of a short-term or long-term absence, retirement, or resignation of incumbents in key board positions in the ERS. Jerry, would you like to add anything to that or add to the beginning of the discussion?
No, I think that would summarize it pretty well. There is a statutory provision that says that the executive director reports to the board and that the deputy will serve in the absence of the executive director. But other than that, it's pretty sketchy, as you mentioned. And so this is a proposed amendment that is designed to, you know, provide a framework and actually flesh out some of the details. And it's up for discussion today. And hopefully the trustees have had a chance to look at it. And if they have any suggestions, now is the time to bring them forward. Well, the only other thing is this amendment of the board rules requires approval by the city attorney's office, and Patrick is on the line for that. Terry, you're going to bring that up on the screen, right?
Yes.
So we can mention, Deborah, we would take good notes on any comments. So Terry's, we can, you know, make changes on the fly here and incorporate them as the board would prefer. So I would invite anybody that has any suggestions or comments or concerns to, you know, to mention them, and we can pencil them in. Thank you.
All right. Well, in reviewing the materials, it seems like there are a couple or several preliminary things we need to decide in order to get any process going. It appears that this board has to decide whether it wants the position exempt or non-exempt, whether or not we want to do a national search or internal candidates only, and whether we want to use an external recruitment firm or have DER run the process. It seems like we can't get anything going until we sort of get those three decisions made. So going to open the floor for discussion.
So we laid this out as kind of a roadmap, and the left column, there's two columns, right and left, that show the alternatives for each question that Deborah mentioned, just in case it's not clear. It's supposed to be somewhat of a flow chart or a roadmap, decision tree. Sorry.
Does everybody have the outline that Jerry's talking about in front of them?
Yes, Deborah, I have the outline.
Okay.
But the first thing I think listed is the exempt versus the non-exempt, right?
Yes, correct, yeah. Rudy.
Yeah, and I notice under exempt, the fourth bullet point says that exempt position recommended due to fiduciary duty requirement for $7.5 billion IRS qualified plan. It need to be responsive to the board. Could you comment on that? Or?
Well, sure. The $7.5 billion is out of date. For one thing, I wrote this back in May, and so it's over $8 billion now. But I think more to the point, really, if it's exempt, then it's an at-will position, serves at the pleasure of the board, and so it has to be responsive, obviously, to the trustees. The trustees can remove the executive director at any monthly meeting with a supermajority, as Mr. Klusman has mentioned to me recently. Six votes out of the eight are required, but still, it's an at-will position. If it's an exempt position, then under the civil service code and under the court decisions, civil service employees have a property right in their job. They own their job, and they can only be dismissed with approval of the Civil Service Commission, I guess. And so there's a strong difference between civil service non-exempt status provides a lot of job security, and exemption provides the board with more responsiveness and to its needs. Believe me, I know from personal experience. So at will is normal in the private sector, okay? That's the state of the law in the state of Wisconsin. Unless you have an employment contract, all employees in the state of Wisconsin in the private sector are at will employees. It's very common. The judicial system is used to that. Employers are used to that. The city is kind of used to civil service, except that cabinet level positions are exempted. Typically, the executive director position actually is a public official position, cabinet level, under state law. However, the charter provides that every time there's a new executive director hired, the board has to decide whether or not they want to make it exempt. Otherwise, it automatically becomes subject to civil service. So that's pretty much what I know about it. Any questions about that?
I think the rationale in the past, I think it was the last two directors were exempt positions. Basic wisdom is when a person can't serve two masters, and I don't think it would be wise of the board to have an executive director who has to deal with the board and deal with the city government through through their authority through the City Service Commission over a person's position. So I think that's been the rationale for the exempt position. And it's worked very successfully with the last two directors. So I don't see why we would change that now.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Helling?
Yeah, I agree with Rudy's points. And just to add on that thing that Jerry mentioned, that gives the board the flexibility, God, hope it doesn't happen, but the new director is doing a bad job. Instead of having to go through the bureaucracy of the city, we're able to, with six votes, get on to the new one, So I would agree with keeping it exempt.
Thank you, Mr. Helling. Anyone else?
Ms. Chair.
Mr. Bell.
Matt has a comment. Thank you, Deborah. Not to belabor the point, I totally agree with the previous comments. I am in favor of the exempt as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Anyone else?
Tom here. Deborah, I agree also with all of Rudy's comments.
All right, thanks, Tom. Anyone? Well, I'll add my two cents. I also agree in favor of having the position exempt. Rudy's comment about serving two masters is absolutely on point. And Jerry, just so the record is clear and for the benefit of new and old board members, you're exempt, right?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. So, Jerry, do we have to, any other comments from board members? Okay.
I just mention one other thing about this. Regardless if a person is exempt or non-exempt, the pay scale is still determined by the salary ordinance because the position is a city employee, and that's important from a legal standpoint because you get indemnified under
first of all, liability is limited under state law, and there is indemnification by the city of Milwaukee. So regardless of whether it's exempt or non-exempt, it's still subject to those requirements.
Any other comments from board members? Jerry, as we make these decisions...
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Oh, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Deborah. I just had a quick question. At some point during this discussion, will we discuss salary ranges or where we're at, or have a discussion about that? I've just done quite a bit, well, not quite a bit, but some research reading other job announcements regarding, and I think at some point we need to address that, or will that come later?
Well, you're right, Mr. Bell. So down the line, when you get to the point where either a recruiter or the DER puts an advertisement in, then it's customary for the pay range to be specified. There is a pay range in the salary ordinance. And then the actual offer of employment, that's where you would determine the rate of pay that's offered. And that's under the salary ordinance. There's a footnote that says that the board has discretion to offer a new person at anywhere in the pay range. DER may want to weigh in on that too, but it's really the board's discretion. So down the line, when you get ready to make an offer, probably if you use an outside recruiter, the recruiter will have some recommendations for you to consider. If you don't use an outside recruiter, then it'll be up entirely to the board, and DER may, want to weigh in on it a little bit.
Did that answer your question, Matt?
Excellent. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah, it does. Thank
okay.
you.
One
and
comment.
We have one.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, I know last time when we had the... can you hear me now?
Yes.
I just trying to get a bit in front of it. I know last time when we had the salary discussions for our team members that it just took a while. So at least we had a little bit of a roadmap going forward regarding. So thank you.
You're welcome, Matt. The one comment I meant to make at the outset is that a lot of the accompanying materials on this item are outdated and will have to be updated by DER or whoever does the nuts and bolts of the recruitment process. So, any other comments or questions from board members?
That was my picture, by the way.
Jerry, my question I started to ask was, as we make these major decisions about the initial decisions about the process, do we have to make a motion about them at the end of this discussion?
Or? That would be a good idea, and there is because you're making a recommendation to the full board, right? Actually, this is actually posted as a special meeting of the full board, so you won't have to, really talk about this in the full board meeting. Deborah, you can give a brief report at the full board meeting, or you can just say the business was handled, at the special meeting, because we did post it for a special meeting because
okay.
we knew that all the trustees would be present potentially. So
okay.
So at the end, whoever wants to make a motion, you can just summarize the decisions and make it in one motion.
All right, thank you. If there are no other comments about exempt versus non-exempt status, why don't we move to the next major decision, which is whether or not, in the event of a recruitment, we wish to do a national search or limit it to internal candidates only. And again, I'll open it up to comments from the board.
This is Rudy again.
Hi, go ahead, Rudy.
Yeah. I'm not very familiar with how these type of searches are conducted. So I have a question about if you do a national search, I would assume that would include internal candidates, but is there a mechanism for the internal candidates to make sure they're considered in the national search? Is it, you know, is this posted, or they submit their resumes, or what are the exact mechanics of it? Because, I mean, a national search doesn't, should include local candidates.
Right. So we did national search for a chief investment officer, for example, in 2013 when Mr. Rick passed, God bless him. And so there was an advertisement that was published in Pension and Investments. It was posted in the DER website. It was also, I believe there was another periodical. I think we also posted it with the International Foundation of Benefits. We did not use a recruiter for that, but it was posted, you know, throughout the city so that people could apply for that position. We didn't get a lot of, we only got one qualified candidate given, which was David. nobody else submitted their applications within the period that was specified, who had the requisite. The board, at Mr. Barmore's suggestion, had asked for, as I recall, he wanted MBA and CFA both, and so we didn't get any other response. But it was, to your point, Rudy, it was posted so that local candidates, internal city candidates, as well, in other words, working for the city already, but also in the local region, could definitely apply. And there's already been some, since we talked about this in an open meeting in May, there have already been three or four candidates that have previously worked for the city that have contacted me to express their interest. So we know there are some local candidates. I told them it's the board's decision and that the recruitment process was pending sometime this year. I think your point is well taken. You want to make sure the pool is expansive enough to attract all the possible candidates that you want to consider. And so that if you do a national search, that will include local people as well.
And if you hired a consulting firm, I assume that the outreach should be similar.
Yes. I had lunch with Wally Morix and Mike Murphy last summer or last fall, like several months ago. And Wally mentioned to me that, you know, the last time he did this search, they hired a professional recruiter, and I think that the cost of that was 20% of the first annual salary that they had negotiated. But he also mentioned that, in his opinion, the best part of it was not so much the outreach, but the education of the board. That the consultant recruiter came in and advised the board about, you know, what the market was for this kind of position, and educated them about the process as well. So you're quite right, Rudy, if you hire somebody like that, they will definitely want to meet with you and advise you. And as soon as you hire them, they'll want to start too, by the way, because they want to get paid as soon as possible.
Does that answer your question? Any other questions, Rudy?
Yes, that was fine. Thank you.
Any other board members have questions or comments?
I can add one more thing. It's the external recruiters covered later on, but as long as we talked about it, our trade association, NCPERS, works with a national recruiting firm that they refer their members to. It's called EFL. It's a well-known national firm. It was one of the firms, I think, that was included last time. Ultimately, the board settled on a solo practitioner by the name of Gary Hudepohl from Cleveland. I think Terry did a quick search. We don't know if he's still in business.
He is?
He is. Okay. That was 18 years ago, and he was, I think, in his 50s at that time, but he's still around. That's good. And there are, in the packet, you can see, that packet, as Deborah mentioned, is out of date. It's really just designed to be a template to show you what happened before. There are not a lot of firms in this space, but there are a few. And so if you decide to go that route, then, you know, we would, you know, do an RFP and contact them all. And then I'll save the rest of the discussion for when we get down to that bullet point.
Deborah, Tom?
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, my thought, you know, I'm really, to me, it's not even close to go national and use a recruiter. It's too important of a position that we would give it any less attention than that. And we really, when we look at what we do day to day, we use external recruiters and professionals in every manager we select for every subgroup of investments that we put money in with Callan and the processes we follow there. And I can't imagine this would be much different. You know, they put out the call like Callan does to whoever, whatever idea that David's gotten into to invest in. And then they compile a list and they screen it out with their professional knowledge and experience. And then they meet with us and tell us things, because we're lay people mostly. And then they give us the best of the best for us to pick from. And they don't limit it to local, but the locals can apply too. You know, national is, local is included in national. So it just seems, and you know, and I would argue that the success of any of our, as I call them, subgroups of, you know, value assets or whatever, we're going to be, you know, absolute return or whatever, that the executive director of this office has a lot more impact on this fund. I mean, that person does everything, hiring, culture, you know, I don't even have to go over it. We all know how much Jerry does. So I just think it's far, far, far too important of a position to not. 20% of 250 is what, $50,000 maybe, when you think of a person?
Right.
That's not even a rounding error. That's nothing. So yeah, that's my two cents.
Thank you, Tom. Anyone else?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I agree with those points. I don't see any downside to opening it up to a national search. Get the best talent pool we can.
Thank you, Tim.
One element of this that we ran into with DER in the past, and of course we have new administration. I'm not sure how they're administering this anymore, but we did at one point, let me rephrase this. If you bring somebody in from out of state, part of the pay package can include relocation expenses. We did have a situation where we brought in an IT manager who happened to live in the state of Wisconsin, and they refused to pay his moving expenses because the ordinance at that time, and I think it still says the same thing, but they said that, you know, it had to be out of state, and as I recall, you know, if they lived in Chicago, which is 90 miles away, they would pay the expenses. But if you live 200 miles away, you know, in La Crosse, they wouldn't. So there is a small consideration there, right? I mean, if you're bringing in somebody from out of state, the pay package has to reflect, you know, the cost of moving. And there are limitations on that too, by the way. I think it's up to 10% of pay. But at least it's there. But for the in-state candidates in the past anyway, under the old administration, they wouldn't pay.
Thanks, Jerry. Anyone else? Any other board members?
Ms. Chair, it's Matt.
Go ahead, Matt.
Just again, not to belabor any points, but agree with both Tom and Tim on what was said. Thank you.
Any other board members? Well, I have my two cents at this point. I'm in favor of a national search. My experience for positions like this has taught me that with a national search, you may get more candidates, a broader pool of candidates, and being able to take advantage of that will only enhance the pool. So I agree with everything that's been previously said.
Deborah, Tom again, can I add one
Tom,
more?
Go ahead.
One more hitch. For consideration, I don't know how this was going to go or if anyone's thought of it, but in this process, I'd like to include Jerry in it. Obviously, he's not going to have a vote when we get down to picking somebody, but I'd like him to be involved in discussions and maybe sitting in on when we start to interview people if it gets to that, because I think his insight is going to be, at least to me, and I'm hoping that you feel, the rest of you feel the same way, that I'm interviewing for someone for his job. I don't know what some slick Willie's going to be selling me. And I'd like Jerry's expertise to tell us, you know, yeah, that's very important to what I do day to day. That's not at all important to what I do day to day. This person shares my vision or not, because I don't want to see a lot of change here. I'd like to continue this business the way it's been going. I think his insight would be valuable.
Thank you, Tom. I think for today, we're trying to get the major stuff out of the way so we can get a process going. And because in the materials, there's a lot that appears to go into this process in terms of the nuts and bolts and steps. And I would agree, and I think there will be ample opportunity for this board to weigh in on the actual nuts and bolts of the procedures once we get applicants and how that will unfold. And I would hope, as DER or ERS personnel are developing the nuts and bolts of the search in terms of applicants, interviews, screening, that piece will come back to the board for some input prior to implementation. Jerry, am I?
Well, I think you're right, Deborah.
Reasonable?
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. And I would also add one thing to Tom's point, having been a candidate in the past. One of the things I wanted to know was from the existing executive director, you know, what are the facts on the ground? What are the hot buttons? But there wasn't anybody, right? Well, there was Marty. And so that's, if you're trying to attract a candidate, I'm sure they will want to talk to the existing people. I mean, everybody goes for a new job wants to know why the other person left. You know, it's easy. I'm retiring, right? But beyond that, you know, there's some value, I think, that, you know, having the existing person. But that's your call entirely. I will do my best not to scare anybody, by the way. So.
Yeah, I just wanted to plant the seed, so at least it's out there now, so when it does come up, like you said, down the road, Deborah, it's not new to anybody, so you can all vet it out in your own minds in the meantime, but I believe strongly in that.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts are quite intricate, and this is just the top line issues, right?
Okay. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Any other comments on this particular piece? If not, then let's take the third decision, which is, are we going to use an external recruitment firm to do the search, or are we going to go with DER? I'm opening it up for discussion from board members.
Tom says that's an easy call.
Go ahead, Tom.
To me, that's easy. We need a recruiter. Again, it's too important, and I don't think DER has the expertise for it. We don't, you know.
Thank you, Tom.
Ellen agrees with that.
Thanks, Tim. Matt?
Just a quick question regarding, I'm guessing that also provides us more flexibility and the ability to make quicker decisions with the recruiting firm, if anyone has any experience with that.
It's just Rudy. I think Jerry said that the recruiting firm will hit the ground running
Yeah, they will come and meet with you. They will want to certainly earn their fee as quickly as possible, that's correct. And they will conduct some education, or at least discussion around the state of the market at the current time for, you know, candidates and what people would expect and how to put your best foot forward as an organization to attract the best candidates, et cetera. Not this, from a, maybe not the best comparison, but think of marketing your home, right? You hire a real estate agent, they tell you how to present the home and all that. The recruiter will do the same thing.
But you know, we do have a hiatus in July through September, and it probably would be good if we could have this pretty well resolved by July.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that sounds good to me. I definitely on the hiring of the recruiting firm as well. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Well, my two cents is I would agree with a national, going with a firm, an external recruitment firm. I think the fact that they meet with the board, there's this back and forth and exchange gives them a better idea of what we're looking for. I also think external firms have access to possible candidates and lines on candidates that DER may not think of, have access to, and they know what's going on out in the field. So I'm definitely in favor of hiring an external firm. That's no disrespect to DER, but it's just the breadth that a national firm brings to a search that I have found helpful.
One thing I would mention, if in the packet, there is as I mentioned, it was intended as a template. There is a one-page summary, actually an outline that shows what the role was last time, how it was split between DER and outside recruiting firm. You don't have to follow that, but that would give you some idea of what DER's role would be on that, if any, right? It's entirely at your discretion. And then, before you move on to the next decision, we skipped over a process. I wanted to mention one thing about the item right above, the external recruiter. Again, I put this together in last May for the board meeting. And since that time, I had conversations with Catherine Holliday at DER. And she advised me that you do not need to submit a request to fill the vacancy to the FNP because it's a statutory job, both under state law and under the city charter. You would still have to go to the CSC and then to the FNP to confirm the CSC position, but the idea that they have to approve filling the vacancy is not, DER does not require that because it's not required by the ordinance. Chapter 36 mentions expressly that there's going to be an executive director. There's really no discretion there for the FNP at that point to say we agree or don't agree to fill a vacancy. Hopefully that wouldn't become important anyway, but I just thought I'd mention that just as an update.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Two things. Because we have another meeting and because we still have one more item on the agenda, I have one more point I wanted to bring up for consideration. And that is, when you look at the job description and you look at the process, they talk about an executive director and a secretary as if they are two different positions, but it appears that historically the duties of the secretary have been folded into the job combined with the work of the ED, which currently I believe, Jerry, you do both right now, the duties of both.
That is correct, and it's actually the current board rule number 2 prescribes that the board has a decision to make each time. And I think you and I talked about that yesterday, Deborah. Mm-hmm. And so at this meeting, you could amend that board rule. You go ahead with your point.
And that's exactly my point. Under the circumstances, I don't believe there's any chance that we're going to ever have two separate positions here. And so I would like to see the job description amended to simply include the duties of the secretary, since they have been done by the ED anyway. I put that out there for some reaction from other board members or comments. And I'll say this finally before that. I think the fact that Jerry was doing both jobs is reflected in the compensation. Whether we knew they were two separate jobs or not. So it seemed would make it a lot simpler if we simply combine the two quote separate positions to reflect the reality of what is going on now. Any comments from board members?
Tom likes all your points about cleaning things up and making them actual in line with reality.
Any other board members? Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, this is Rudy. I agree.
Thank you, Rudy. Anything, any other comments from board members, questions on that issue?
Mr. Chair, Matt again.
Hi, Matt. Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead. Matt, are you muted?
No, I'm sorry about that. You know, Rudy brought up a great point, you know, with our break in August and trying to get a lot of this wrapped up by July. I was just wanted to have a quick discussion about if everyone feels comfortable if we just throw this discussion going forward on every board meeting prior to the meeting, if it has to be through the legislative committee, or if we just add a discussion at each board meeting going forward so we can address questions as they come up. I think July is going to get here pretty quick. We're already at the end of January, so we're looking at 5 months or so. That way we just have a plan going forward of when we can have these discussions instead of trying to rush meetings for everybody.
Sure, Matt, you're correct. The only reason this isn't a legislative committee meeting at this point is because we're proposing a board rule change, which requires by the terms of the board rules themselves, requires the legislative committee to be impaneled. But once you amend the board rule, if you decide to amend it, then it can simply go to the full board meeting every month, whichever you prefer. But if you decide to keep it in the legislative committee, then we can, you know, have it, you know, scheduled before each board meeting. It's up to you guys, whatever you want to do.
If it's, I'd like to open up for discussion, if it's okay, I think if we just add it to each board meeting so we can have it there as a placeholder to discuss. I think, I think, you know, summer's going to get to us pretty quickly here. And if we have a plan, I'm guessing there will be some special meetings that have to be held at some point. But I think based on everyone's schedules and planning purposes, if we just have that placeholder, that would be my suggestion. But I'm definitely open for discussion. Thanks.
Thanks, Matt. Any other board members want to weigh in?
Tom, I like...
Go ahead, Tom.
Tom, I like Matt's idea of putting it on each agenda as an update and status and whatever to keep things rolling. Otherwise, things... The new flavor of the day always takes over, and then we get to July, and we're like, oh, man, what happened? So, yeah, I like that idea. Keep at it.
Thanks, Tom. Anyone else? I hate to be the person who throws a little rain on it, but I like the idea of putting it on every board meeting. The HR piece of me thinks it's a really aggressive schedule to have it done by July under the circumstances, but I surely hope we can do it. I do. Any other comments on board members?
Hey, Mr. Chair, it's Rudy again. Yeah, when I spoke of July, I really didn't think of having the whole thing done by then, but at least try and get to a list of, you know, of final candidates that we could start considering. And that's more along the lines I was thinking. The other question I have, and this is a thing that's peculiar in many ways to the city, because they work on this position regime, that is, you have a position and the person fills it, you have, not only do you have people leave positions, and then maybe the next day they're replaced by another person. Often they leave a position and sometimes months go by before they're replaced. But you seldom have a situation where there's overlap so that the person leaving the position could be of a help to the new person. And I don't think here this would happen either, the way the city works. But is that something that would be a value to consider, considering the level of responsibility? And if it is, how would that even be, is that even possible under the regime that we're working under?
Well, Mel, you're on the line too, right? So correct me if I say this wrong, but my understanding is that DR would consider granting a temporary position authority to allow for parallel, if that's the right concept, if that's what you were talking about, Rudy. There's also,
yes.
Melody's also deputy director, and in the event that you didn't, well, first of all, I would stay until you have found somebody, even if it's past the first of next year, okay? I'm not going to leave you in the lurch. But we always have a deputy, to be available in the event of an absence of the executive director. But DER does have these auxiliary position authority under the ordinance. And so there are some times where there's potential for parallel. Is that what you're referring to, Rudy?
Yes, well, it depends on who we wind up hiring.
Right.
Right. You really make a judgment on how much that would be of help or not. Obviously, an internal candidate, it probably wouldn't be necessary if they were internal to the ERS, but someone who's running a private plan, this is rather a different program, since it's a public plan, it might be something to consider.
Thank you, Rudy. Thank you for the clarification on the timeline also.
Yes.
One thing I would like to mention on that.
Yes, Chair.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Matt, go ahead.
Sorry for the confusion. I should have been more clear, but I agree with Rudy. Basically, never thought it would get done by July, but just so we have, some kind of check marks we're meeting along the way. But I think, getting some candidates by summertime, and then we spend fall vetting all of them, I think that would be more realistic. So sorry for the confusion.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay.
Well, any other board members?
Deborah, this is Jerry. I wanted to
go ahead.
Go back to your prior issue, just to resolve it. Two things. And so in the interest of, moving the process along, you had suggested that the secretary also be the ED, and Terry had penciled in on the screen. In the current board rules where it says secretary may be filled by the ED, he put in shall. If you approve that today, I will make sure that that's incorporated in the job description, and that job description goes before the Civil Service Commission when you go to have the job exempted, so we get it all done in one fell swoop and don't have to go through a separate step of working through a job description with DER. We'd like to have the combination of the job description and exemption all part of the same process, and just to avoid having to go to multiple months of going through that process. And then, of course, if you want to bring this matter
into the board. It would be a good idea if you make any amendments to the board rules that you want today. That way, it can always just be part of the regular board meeting. Well, it could be anyway. I mean, you just have to notice it as combination legislative board. I guess we could overcome that, but if you have any changes you want to make to the board rule, well, it doesn't have to be today. We can take them up again with the full board, I guess, and just notice it as a legislative committee meeting, as I mentioned. Because there's a lot of text here, and maybe there's some people that want to make comments about it. Sorry for that riff.
So if I understand you correctly, Jerry, you're saying that with respect to permanently adding the duties of the secretary and combining those duties, putting all those duties under the executive director, we need to make that recommendation, at least that particular one, today. That would be helpful.
Well, that's what I started out to say, but again, this is a work in progress. I guess if they want to take some time to tune up these board rules, you could certainly make that suggestion today, but we can bring these board rules back to every board meeting, every legislative committee after here too. I didn't want to rush the process, but I also didn't want to delay it. I'm sorry. I was just, pardon me for thinking out loud in a meeting we're running short on time.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
I kind of like your second suggestion, because there's a lot, and as we have discussed this and look at the detail, other board members may have some comment.
Yes.
Or questions. But I do think we agree on incorporating the secretary, the duties of the secretary under the ED. And that's the one thing I think all of us agree on. Other than that, I don't know that there's much more we can accomplish today in light of time constraints. And so are we looking for a motion that reflects that the board would like the position exempt, that it would like it done as a national search, that we would like an external recruitment firm to do it, and we'd like the one modification to the board rules in terms of the duties of the executive director to reflect the addition of the secretary's duties to the ED permanently? That's a mouthful, but am I right?
I think you hit all the points that we discussed.
Yes.
Yes, Chair, it's Matt, I think that's a great phrase, motion. And if you're ready for that, I can make that motion to approve first one, if you're comfortable with it.
I go ahead. I'd like, will someone make a motion to reflect the decisions that we made just in this meeting thus far? Go ahead.
I'll make that motion.
Ellen, no second.
It's a motion and second that that the board wishes to have the position of executive director in terms of a search exempt, that it be done on the basis of a national search, that an external recruitment firm be hired to do so, and finally, that the job description for the executive director be modified to permanently incorporate the duties of the secretary, and that it no longer be two separate positions. Is it all in favor? Or here, are there any objections? Motion passes. Is that it, Jerry?
I'll just make one last comment. Next time, Mary Turk, who is here with us today, has prepared a draft RFP for seeking a recruiter, and I will bring that before the committee and the board for the next meeting.
Okay.
For your consideration.
Okay. So let's get to item number two. So hopefully we can stay on schedule. And item number two on the agenda is a discussion around whether the board should recommend The city requests a waiver of LESB requirements for limited duty positions in the Milwaukee Police Department. Mr. Klusman, I believe this was initiated by you, so would you like to speak to it?
Yeah, sure. I guess all I'm really recommending we do is make sure there's no disconnect between the various entities within city government. Over the last few approvals or reviews we've had for a couple DDR applicants, it's come up that there's a new trend, possibly, I guess I'll say, about the LESB requirements and how they square or not with the city's limited duty program, and we just want to alert the city to that. I've had other discussion with Ms. King, who was then on the board at the time, who is now the benefits director over at DER, and there didn't seem to be a lot of knowledge over there about that. So if this is a city issue, and they may want to deal with, apparently, as we've been told, the LESB has some stringent requirements that don't particularly comport to the limited duty SOP, and they may want to revisit that on their end. So it'd be kind of a communication, direct our staff to just communicate with the city entity that this is going on, and they may want to deal with it. And then it's up to the city to do what it wants. That makes sense? I know what I'm saying.
Tom, I'm not sure I know what you mean when you say it doesn't comport with the limited duty protocols. And if somebody else was jumping in too, I'm sorry if I interrupted that.
Well, apparently we were told in one of the last one or two DDRs that there's this LESB standard that members have to finish the course of shooting course every year now. And my understanding from those changes at LESB when I was on the department was that, you know, people weren't attending the annual training as required, so the LESB passed more of a statewide rule that, you know, you need to get your certification in, and if you need to get your annual, I think there's annual firearms and biannual EVOC to maintain your certification at the LESB. The city of Milwaukee has a standard operating procedure in the police department that limited duty police officers are only obligated to perform what they can within their limitations. So that's a disconnect between the LESB standard and the MPD standard, which is apparently DDR applicants are telling their doctor or the council that, look, we need to be this full duty person and perform every aspect of policing. And LESB may be well open to the fact that there's a stipulation for limited duty personnel, you know, for the limited duty protocols in the Milwaukee Police Department to maintain their certification, yet be in a limited duty status under the department's SOP. Mm-hmm. So somebody should square that up or not, otherwise there is no limited duty program. Because if it's at one hand you have a standard of all or nothing, and in the Milwaukee Police Department you have a standard of limited duty if possible. And that can cause the city a lot of problems, and Deborah, I know you know this from your former role with the city, is that will affect their on-duty injuries and limited duty people also. So
thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, that make more sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Madam Chair?
Patrick?
Yes, thank you. Assistant City Attorney Pam McLean. Good morning, everyone. I have a couple of thoughts I just want to share with the committee. The first is that this is posted for a recommendation or to discuss a recommendation. I think what I just heard from Mr. Klusman is that perhaps this is more of an inquiry than a recommendation. I did have some brief discussions with our collective bargaining attorneys prior to today's meeting, and they did raise some concern that this item might intrude on the city's collective bargaining process, which is obviously something that is completely within their purview and not within the board's purview. But just hearing Mr. Klusman's explanation, I think I might have a proposal that might, if not resolve the problem, then at least assist the board in making further determinations on this issue. I'm happy to look into this. I think having heard Mr. Klusman's explanation, I now have a better understanding of what the concern is. And I would be happy to report back to the board with more clarity about how the LESB standards are impacting duty disability, at least theoretically, obviously not looking at any individual case, but maybe it would be better if, you know, I undertook that action, and that way the board can have a little more detailed information before they consider the issue. I will throw or ask Mr. Klusman, would that be beneficial to him? Or, you know, I'm certainly happy to do that.
Yeah, that's dead on correct, Patrick. Thank you.
Okay, so I think in that case, Madam Chair, that maybe instead of taking a formal vote on this item now, I can just take the direction of the committee and report back, and then the committee can decide if they want to take any further action on it. Would that be acceptable?
Thank you, Patrick. I had some of the same concerns, and so no need to voice them now. I think if we can table this, that would be absolutely helpful on this issue, and we can revisit it once you have your information.
You weren't at that meeting, Patrick, were you, when this first came up, right?
I think that was the one meeting that I happened to miss.
Okay,
so Jerry, do we have to do something formal to table this?
No, it just we'll carry it over for the next discussion.
Okay.
You
okay.
Have to do that.
Right.
And, I'll talk to Tom about this offline too a little bit. If we're going to write a letter, maybe we should write it to the chief of staff, and we can copy the benefits people too, because I know that they're part of the process. They're workers' comp reports to the benefit director.
Yeah, I think Patrick is absolutely on point. I think there are a number of possible implications here and a number of departments that could be involved in that discussion or that he can get information from. So having said that, I think that concludes the two items on our agenda. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
That will make
sense.
There's
nothing further. Second?
Justin will second.
Thank you. The meeting of the Legislative Committee is adjourned. Thank you.
Deborah, congratulations.